Thank you, Rob. It's good to see you all. So how's life for you at the moment?
Great.
Big question, thank you. Big question. For some it's going to be great, for others maybe not so. But how is life for you at the moment? You know, if I did come round and ask each one of you in turn that question, and having taken on board all that this sermon series that we're in at the moment has taught us about caring and coming alongside and journeying with people, and therefore giving you the time that each of you deserve to tell us about how life is for you at the moment, then the Sunday roast would be well and truly burnt to a crisp. And if I'd started on this side and said, Sandy, how's life for you at the moment? And then worked my way round, said, Doris, how's life for you at the moment? Well, she'd say, I'm hungry, and I've missed my flight to Dublin. And it would just have taken too much time. Of course, being hungry, that's a valid option. If there were any of you who are human biologists here, you'd say, in answer to that question, how's life? Well, I'm moving, and I'm breathing, and my senses, they seem to be touching, tasting, seeing, hearing, and smelling okay. And I'm eating, that is, I'm taking stuff in, and I seem to be getting rid of stuff okay as well. Thank you very much. And the biologists amongst you would say, well, yes, those are the signs of life. Life is okay. Pretty good at the moment. And that's all kind of necessary, functional, external stuff. It's to do with how we do life and the basic day-to-day way. We could go down a level a little bit, I suppose, and look and touch on the effort it takes to sustain that life, the commitments, the responsibilities, the constant pressures and demands of everyday life, just so that we can continue to breathe and touch and smell and all the other things. It's what Jesus, in the well-known parable of the seeds, calls the cares of this world. Jesus says that the cares and the riches and the pleasures of this life, this bios, as it is in the Greek, which from which we get our word biology, how these things wrap themselves around us like weeds, throttling and choking us to death. Some of you will say that the cares of this world are dominant for you in your life at the moment. That's maybe the biologist's answer. Ask a counsellor, how's life for you at the moment? They won't tell you about their biological functions. Oh, none of that. No, they'll say something about their inner life. That world that we all have of our thoughts and our feelings that then kind of influence our choices and our decisions. It's our private, personal world, our internal world. It's less obvious than our physical world. And it's a dimension of life that then shapes how we are perceived by others, how we relate to others. And of course, all of that is necessary and much of it is good. And we'll all know people, and thank God we do know people, who seem to do life well in this respect. When joy is a valid response, they're joyous. And when grief is a valid response, then they weep. And yet, our inner world can also be a source of great worry. Studies show that more often than not, the need to prove our worth and value and find a sense of significance and pushes us into the sort of busy syndrome. We have to get on. Always feeling the need to be needed, the need to please people, to win their approval. And these subtle drives push us on to strive to do more. Sometimes through guilt and a fear of failure and not wanting to disappoint or wanting to meet others' expectations, we push ourselves beyond our limits. We take on more than is good for us. We extend ourselves even to the point of exhaustion. And the problem is, of course, that we can only live on adrenaline rushes for a certain amount of time before actually everything just caves in. And with restlessness and unease in our soul, the soul, the heart, as it were, of our inner life, or as the Greeks call it, the psyche, from which we get our word psychology. This inner world and the weight of weariness takes its toll And life becomes a duty, not a delight. So how's life for you at the moment? You know, as those who seek to follow Christ, we would recognize the importance of the outer life. We need all that external stuff. We recognize, too, the importance of the inner life. We would be less than human without feelings and thoughts and things of that nature and character. But we also want to express the understanding that we have of life, the understanding we've discovered, which is a third dimension of life, the with God life. The life that Rob was talking about earlier on, the life in all its fullness kind of life, the abundant life. The Greeks had a word for that too. It's a word that's a name that some parents give to their daughters. The word is Zoe. And it'll come as no surprise to you that Jesus talked about this kind of life quite often. And it's the kind of life also that was attributed to Jesus. It was the sort of life he exhibited. So when Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," it wasn't the biological life that he was talking about or the psychological life he was talking about. It was about the with God kind of life that he was talking about. And when John, in his wonderful opening verses to the account of Jesus' life, referring to him as the Word, says this: "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and in him was life, and that life was the light of all people." It wasn't the biological kind of life he was talking about or the psychological kind of life he was talking about. It was the with God kind of life he was talking about. And when Jesus says, "The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy, I have come that they may have life and that they may have it abundantly," it wasn't the biological kind of life he was talking about or the psychological kind of life. It was the with God kind of life. And as he went around, this with God kind of life just exuded from every pore of his being. He couldn't help but share this life with others. He would meet people who were trapped in other dimensions of life, trapped by their physical, biological state, trapped by their psychological, careworn state, trapped by their inner understanding. And he would offer them new life, a with God kind of life. So let's hear about one such encounter as Jesus meets a man who is stuck, who is trapped in life. And so we read in John's Gospel, chapter 5, verses 1 to 15, that sometime later Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five colonnades, which are covered. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. And one who had been there for 38 years was seen by Jesus lying there. And when he learned that he'd been in this condition for a long time, Jesus asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I've no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." And then Jesus said, Get up, pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. And the day on which this took place was the Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, "It's the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat on the Sabbath." But he replied, "The man who made me well told me to. He said, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" And the man who was healed had no idea who it was. For Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you're well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." And the man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who made him well. So at the beginning of this sermon, I asked you a big question. How's life going for you at the moment? I wonder if you spotted the big question that Jesus asked the man lying at the pool. And that question was, do you want to get well? Now, that's an enormous question for this man. So let's have a quick look at this man's world, this man's life, and try and get an understanding of those things into which this huge question, do you want to get well, is asked. You see, for 38 years, for 13,879 days, this man's life has been dominated by infirmity. And that infirmity is no doubt, it's very obviously expressed externally. We can see that he is infirm. And certainly, we will see that it has an impact psychologically. You know, today, those who study these things would say that he's an example of learned helplessness. There was a very influential study done in the 1960s by a guy called Martin Seligman. He was a graduate student at the University of Pennsylvania. And he stumbled onto this interesting phenomenon called learned helplessness. And it happened when some dogs were given some very slight and light electric shocks over which they had no control. No matter what the dogs did, they could not stop the shocks. The shocks simply happened at random. They started, they stopped. And later, those same dogs were placed in a situation where they could easily stop the shocks. They were put in a box with a low barrier in the middle of it, and all they had to do was step over that barrier to the other side, and the shocks would stop. And ordinarily, dogs would learn to do that very quickly. When they're shocked, dogs start jumping. And they discovered that crossing the barrier would bring relief. However, these previously shocked dogs had apparently learned something different. They learned that they were powerless to stop the shocks. They came to believe that no matter how hard they tried, nothing they did would make a difference. And so they stopped trying, they lay down, and they refused to move, even though a few steps would have made all the difference in the world. And Seligman describes this phenomenon as learned helplessness. It is the giving up reaction. It's the quitting response that follows from the belief that whatever you do doesn't matter. And you know, I hear people, including Christ followers, express this. And so when speaking of their acknowledged failures and their circumstances in life, they say something like this: it's just the way I am. It's just the way I am. And they've given up. And they're lying by their pools for years, fully aware of their infirmities, often wallowing in self-pity and saying, it's just the way I am. And everything in me screams out, but it needn't be the way you have to be tomorrow. Do you want to get well? And the man by the pool showed off all of his self-pity when he responded to Jesus' question. You see, there was an understanding that once in a while an angel would stir the waters of the pool, and the first one in, after such a stirring, would get healed. And the constant question would have been amongst that community of disabled people who sat around that pool, will an angel come today? Will the pool get stirred? And will it be me that gets there first? Will I or won't I get into the pool? And Jesus comes up to this man, and he says, do you want to get well? And in reality, there are only two answers to that question. It's what we call a closed question. It's either yes or it's no. But the man found another answer. Listen to what the man says. He says, sir, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, somebody else goes down ahead of me. And you can hear the learned helplessness in his voice. He's just resigned to his situation. It's just the way I am. He's settled for a victim mentality. I am the victim. Other people did stuff to me. Things have happened that I had no control over. My life is on hold. I'm simply the victim of circumstances. It's just the way I am. But the issue is not that the man by the pool has been a victim. He most certainly has. There's no denying that. The issue is that he has settled for being a victim and doing so with every part of his life. A victim mentality means we consistently look for reasons why life isn't working for us. And the presence of Jesus has now means that despite life dealing him a terrible hand, he has the possibility of moving from being a victim to becoming a victor. And moving from being static in his life, stuck in his life, to living life with purpose and a future. But he's faced with a choice now, a choice of whether to embrace that possibility. Jesus, of course, exhorts this man to change, to turn his back on his past life, to repent, to think again about life, to embrace the new life. And he says to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. You see, Jesus, this exuder of the with God life, cannot and does not walk away from people, leaving them stuck in their circumstances, in their biological and their psychological lives. He offers this third dimension of life, the with God life, abundant life, life in all its fullness. Paraclesis is the name that we've given to this sermon series. It's about helping people move on from where they are often stuck in life, journeying with them out of that situation. And Jesus directs this man to pick up his mat by himself and walk. Sometimes, of course, people have the expectation of being carried. But journeying isn't carrying. Journeying is walking with someone. It's saying, I want you to take responsibility for your world, your biological life, your psychological life. But predominantly, you're with God life. On Friday, 8 of us travelled up to Tamworth to attend the service of thanksgiving for the life of Andy Dennis. We wanted to be with Tim and Judy and Elizabeth and the rest of the family. We wanted to express not only our own love, but do so on behalf of the wider church family, on behalf of us all. It was all that we are learning about at the moment in this series. It was caring. It was coming alongside. It was expressing our desire to journey with you. And whilst it was a day, and acknowledged to be so, a day of great sadness, and there were tears, it also had its moments of joy. And there was laughter. We were told about an episode in Andy's life which kind of resonated with me for this passage today. You see, there was a time when, well, it wasn't said like this, but I heard it like this, when Andy expressed learned helplessness. It was described as a lack of confidence. And it seemed to be a given character trait about him, even at a very early age. And then one day, Tim, Andy's dad, echoed the words of Jesus. Andy, he said, get up, get on this bike and ride. And Tim showed Andy a new dimension of life. Bike riding was to become a passion for Andy, a source of great joy for Andy. And no doubt in those first few moments and days, Tim walked alongside Andy and then ran alongside Andy and then cycled alongside Andy. But at no point did he get on the bike for Andy and with Andy and do the cycling for him. And the transformation in Andy's confidence was there for all to see, to the extent that Andy, we were told, would then cycle in places and in ways and manners that Tim would never have dared to do so. To change, to get on your bike and ride, to take up your mat and walk, to respond positively to the question of Jesus, do you want to get well? To embrace the with God life is a choice. And make no mistake, the choices we make today have enormous impact on our life tomorrow. If you choose not to do anything, that has an enormous impact on your life tomorrow. Sometimes people we come alongside are living with the consequence of a bad choice. And we need to help them face responsibility and find fresh direction and insight in life. And maybe because they've made bad choices, they've lost the sense of their ability to make any choices at all. And they need someone journeying with them, helping them to find their confidence in God and to make choices according to his plans and his purposes. And so Jesus hears about this man who's been sitting beside this pool for 38 years, full of self-pity, and he gives him a choice. Do you want to get well? Bless him, the man does it. He hears Jesus. He takes up his mat and he walks. And later on, Jesus meets with him again and he gives him a further instruction. Not only has he told him to stand and walk, but he also says, now, change direction in life. You've been made well. Go and sin no more, lest the worst thing come upon you. And in saying this, it kind of suggests that there's been a wrong choice that maybe got him there in the first place. It's as though Jesus said, don't go, but don't go and do that anymore. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in an even worse place. I am so wanting you. I am exhorting you. Go and live life in the light of the decision that you've made. Go and do life with God. Don't sin anymore. Go and do life as it should be done. You've made the choice to stand. Now continue making right choices as you journey forward, choosing the right directions, the right pathway, choosing the God kind of life. And that's the wonderful message of the good news of Jesus. He doesn't walk on by, he walks with. He gives us the choice to embrace a new life, a different life, the with God kind of life. So today, what will you choose? You who feel stuck in life, do you want to get well? Because you have an invitation offered to you today to embrace the kind of life that God would have you live. No longer stuck, but becoming more of the person that he would have you be. And it's not something you have to do on your own. Because if I had indeed gone round this whole room when I asked my opening question, how is life for you at the moment? You would have heard stories of other people who are stuck and others who were stuck and are now moving again, who are taking faltering steps, and still others who would be saying, this life is the best life. Come on. Get on your bike and ride. Take up your mat and walk. And we'll do that with you. Welcome to the God life. Let's do this life together. Your choice. Will you choose life in all its fullness? Let's pray.